Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Meet Gary. Gary's about to become an Einstein in an instant.
Whoa, Einstein hair. I like it.
That's right, Gary, because you're using Salesforce powered by Einstein AI to connect data, predict business trends, generate personalized content, and wow customers.
I do feel a lot smarter.
Because you're not just Gary anymore. You're Gary, empowered by Einstein AI.
Did you hear that, team? I'm an Einstein.
Oh, can I get a selfie?
The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
You know success when you see it, or you think you do, the people in the spotlight. But what about those small business masterminds who succeed at making their money work harder? They do that by having a business bank account with QuickBooks Money, which now earns 5% annual percentage yield. Making your money work as hard as you do? That's how you business differently. Learn more about QuickBooks Money at quickbooks.com/5APY. Banking services provided by Green Dot Bank, member FDIC. Only funds and envelopes earn APY. APY can change at any time.
Welcome to another episode of the Vanguards of Healthcare podcast, where we chat with the leaders at the forefront of change in the healthcare industry. My name is Jonathan Palmer, and I'm a healthcare analyst at Bloomberg Intelligence, the in-house research arm of Bloomberg. We're happy to welcome Mark Thier to the podcast episode today. He's the CEO of Waltz Health, which he co-founded a few years back. Previously, he was the CEO of OptumRx and one of its acquisitions, Catamaran. He also had stops at Caremark, Allscripts, and IBM. Welcome to the podcast today, Mark.
Jonathan, thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Well, why don't we get started with Waltz Health? That's your newest venture. I'd love to hear the origination story of the company and what made you come off the sidelines, so to speak, to start a new venture.
Yeah, thank you. Well, it's really nice to be here. So Waltz Health is a digital health disruptor, and we're setting out here to rewire the pharmaceutical supply chain. So when I came out of my last gig as the CEO at OptumRx, I teamed up with my son, Jonathan, and hired a group of folks that helped me build OptumRx into a market-leading PBM. And we went on a mission a few years ago to, as I said, rewire the supply chain with one goal in mind. And we have this pasted on our wall. We're here to lower the cost of prescription drugs for every American. So we're finding ourselves well on the way on an exciting adventure. And we are high stepping it, I like to say.
So if we think about that that idea of disruption, you know, where do you start? You know, what's the first solution you're bringing to market?
Well, we have a product line that we have built to run alongside the established players in the industry. And our first product is called Marketplace Search for Pharmacies. And here we focused on the cash pay portion of the market, which is in the range of 10% of the prescriptions that are filled. And, you know, people use tools like a GoodRx or a SingleCare. They're good tools. But if people knew there were 130 other cards in the market and that you could, in fact, gain a much lower price, would you be interested? And the answer is yes. So we built Kayak for prescription drug cards, and we've now installed that tool. It's a pharmacy-friendly tool, and it's installed in 4 of the top 6 pharmacy chains in the country. And I'll tell you, the stores love it. The product market fit is very strong, and we're lowering their costs overall, their administration costs, and passing on lower prices to their clients. So that's the first product that we have in the marketplace. It's going very well.
Maybe just dive into that a little bit deeper for those who might not be as intimately familiar with the cash pay market and how discount cards work. Can you talk about the mechanics behind the scenes? You know, a customer shows up with Kayak. I guess that there's an algorithm behind it that finds the best price vis-a-vis a specific card. But what's happening on the pharmacy side and the PBM side to make that transaction happen?
Yeah, well, it's pretty easy to use. And because we chose this portion of the market, it's very fragmented and many inefficiencies here. My team are experts in the cash pay space. So the tool we built, you walk into the store and this chain has got it deployed, and in front of the farm tech or the pharmacist is a QR code. You take your phone, you click on our QR code, and in two clicks, you get the lowest price for that drug in that dosage that day for that store every time. And the stores love it because it doesn't really impede their workflow. It's additive to their margin line in a big way, and it's easy to use. Consumers love it for all the same reasons, and they're getting the lowest price instead of having to produce 5, 6, 7 cards to find out which one is the lowest. So it's actually a pretty simple solution. It's very elegant, and we're having tremendous success with it.
You know, and how does that compare to a GoodRx or a Single Care, or, you know, there's others out there that you've mentioned? You know, how competitive is the space?
Well, it is competitive, but those two cards, as an example, are the highest priced cards in the marketplace. They're good products and they're saving people money, but they've spent a lot of money to acquire customers through direct to consumer advertising. And because of that, they need to make their returns. And so it turns out they're the highest priced cards for the stores to utilize. And what we've done is figured out a competitive marketplace to pit multiple cards against one another to compete. So we are taking the inefficiencies out of the cash pay market. We think we've got the tool that will actually revolutionize the space.
And when you say it's the highest price, that's for the pharmacy chain itself.
Yeah.
And in terms of the dispensing fee that they're getting from the PBM behind that card.
Exactly. It's really the administration fee that gets clawed back by utilizing that card. That's what it is.
Maybe without giving away anything that's too sensitive from a competitive standpoint, but on an order of magnitude, how different is the fee on your card or your solution versus some of the bigger incumbents?
Our fee is in the range of 20 to 30% of the total cost of their fee. So it's
that's a big difference.
It's a big difference, yes.
And so with that as your beachhead, you know, what's next or what other solutions have you guys deployed in the space?
Well, Jonathan, the second product we deployed is, we're very excited about it. We call it Marketplace Search for Payers. And we basically took that same tool that we just described and moved it into the funded benefit. So when I say that, what we've done is integrated it into a large health plan's funded PBM benefit. Here, our national launch partner is one of the nation's largest Blues plans. And what we've done is integrated into their PBM engine, this Kayak tool, to create lower of logic. Sometimes when people go in and use their insurance card, they wonder why is it more expensive under insurance than it is to pay cash? And this happens 15 or 20% of the time. It's really a problem for a consumer. What we've done is created lower of logic, and that never happens with using our tool. Plan pay, cash pay is always compared, and the lower of is presented to the member at the point of dispensing, and it's transparent to them. So what we've seen here is phenomenal uptake. We just went live 2 months ago with our first and largest client, and now 8 million lives are utilizing this tool, and we're saving patients and this large plan a lot of money. So it's been very successful. We've got quite a few plans lined up right behind it to deploy it, and we're very excited about it.
Maybe can you talk a little bit about that cycle or the sell-in cycle for that? You know, if I think about some of the other players in the market, you know, GoodRx is entwined with Express Scripts and Caremark. You know, you're clearly probably not going after those two customers, but who else are you, or how does the sales cycle work, you know, with those plan sponsors?
Yeah, I don't think I'd say we're not going after those customers. Our solution is a market clearing solution. They have single card solutions. And so if you're trying to create the lowest price for the consumer, which we're here to do, ours will be a winner all day long. And you can gather that because we're perusing the marketplace for the lowest price. So the sell cycle is actually lengthy because health plans take time to make these decisions. There's data and analysis that goes into it, and we're very familiar with it, having grown up in this space for, you know, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So none of this stuff happens overnight, but we're getting tremendous traction. The backlog is full of qualified prospects because we have built the market clearing solution in the ISP or the integrated savings product market space. And the market's beginning to see it and gravitating toward it.
If we think about the long-term evolution of that marketplace, I mean, what's your view on where it's going to ultimately wind up vis-a-vis pricing? Because I have a view that generics are eventually going to get to cost plus at some point. You know, does the solution still work if we get to a market model that's similar to cost plus?
Well, I think you've asked a very good question here. And I think long-term, this portion of the market does arbitrage itself away, as you've described. And you see some new entrants driving cost plus type models. And it is forcing the incumbents to reconsider how they price in this space. And so ultimately, I do think there'll be a place for an integrated savings product. Will it continue to be a marketplace that's as fragmented and it's kind of the wild, wild west right now? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. We'll see compression. We'll see administration fee compression. And on balance, this will be good for consumers and obviously the stores who are paying these administration fees.
And so, you know, I think you and I both know that, you know, 90% of scripts are generics, and that's probably most likely where this this solution is being utilized. But if we think about the other 10%, the branded side, and particularly the specialty side, can you talk about some of the disruption or solutions you're planning to introduce in that space?
Yeah, and now you've asked the key question. This is sort of the bet the company question. We think, you know, helping to reorganize the generic space and cash pay is important. We think helping plan sponsors through our ISP tool is important. But it really provides more of a cash pay, plan pay bridge into something tremendously important. And this is our most exciting product. We're launching the Intelligent Specialty Engine. And as you well know, I know you cover the space. This is a $300 billion TAM. It's very big. It's growing. The new NDA pipeline is replete with specialty drugs. And it's our goal to revolutionize the specialty space. So I'll just take a minute and describe for you what we're doing. Well, we built software. That's what we are. We're a software company. And we built what amounts to an intelligent router that has two very important levers. The first, which pharmacy is most appropriate and lowest cost for you, the paying member? Second, which drug is most appropriate in the choices that you have among the specialty continuum? And so we've laced this together. The product itself will be ready to rock in July this year. We're pressure testing it and regression testing it right now. And the tool itself will save 15% of the total spend of a typical plan. And as I said, going live in June, our plan here is to run alongside the traditional PBM model, really with a goal to make the current specialty offerings better. That's what our whole goal here is, to run alongside the model and improve the performance of the existing offerings. So I said a lot, but that's what we're doing in specialty.
So maybe taking a step back there, you know, could you describe the typical workflow today in specialty and how the you know, the doctor prescribes a specialty drug, you know, where that drug comes from and how it comes in on, you know, or how it's maybe different in your model going forward?
I'm happy to. So today, obviously, biotech firms and pharmaceutical firms are the innovators and they make these drugs available and they're doing a phenomenal job building life-saving drugs. The prescribing process is typically specialist driven. And so in a doctor's office, they're typically using an electronic health record and entering prescriptions into SureScripts. These prescriptions are being routed to pharmacies. And so we've built an intelligent routing tool that helps the system think about the appropriate place for this prescription to land. We've inserted ourselves in that process. And then from there, an entire set of edits, whether they're clinical edits, financial edits, prior authorization edits, a really rich range of things that need to be done for these high-cost medications. They're performed, and then that prescription is routed to the right place with the right drug. There are, as you know, therapeutic interchange decisions that can be made. There are biosimilars. There are generics in this space. And all these things need to be taken into consideration. And our tool, the Intelligent Specialty Solution, is built to consider all of those. So We're extremely excited. We think this will be a revolutionary new tool in the specialty space, and we're very excited, talking to lots of large payers about this tool as we speak.
You know, maybe it's still early days, but as you think about where those savings are going to come from, you know, I imagine there's a certain element of interchangeability, right? You know, particularly around some of the anti-inflammatory drugs like Humira that have just gone biosimilar. You know, is that one of the bigger buckets that you foresee as driving those cost savings? Is it the biosimilar bucket? Is it routing it to a different specialty pharmacy? Where do you think the bolus of the savings are actually going to come from?
Well, let's break it down a little bit. So The primary savings are going to come from the most efficient pharmacy and from the correct and therapeutically correct drug. But as you've described biosimilars, let me just take a moment, because our tool contemplates, is there a biosimilar available for this specialty med? And just to unpack that a little bit, you know, there's 49 approved biosimilars by the FDA today, and they're a long list: Avastin, Enbrel, Epogen. But if you look at the biggest one, it's Humira. And Humira has actually had a biosimilar. There are 10 biosimilars in the market for Humira. And yet, AbbVie has maintained a 97% market share for the branded drug. And you have to ask yourself, if you're unfortunately afflicted with, you know, psoriatic arthritis or Crohn's or any autoimmune disease, this drug really works. And the branded manufacturer has found a way to create a force field around it. It's the most heavily rebated drug in the history of pharma. And so what's required here is a reconstruction of the rebate model inside the pharmaceutical industry and really pushing that rebate amount into the member price. And so this is part of our mission that we're on, but the tool itself, the intelligent specialty engine at the highest level, think of it as an intelligent routing tool to move the correct prescription to the most efficient pharmacy, and they will compete. We do have a network of pharmacies that we've built to compete on price.
And so, you know, as I think about the specialty pharmacy space today, you know, it's dominated by a few big players. One of them, you know, your former company. You know, will we see a shift in that landscape using a tool like this going forward? Will a number of prescriptions get routed instead of to, you know, CVS Specialty or Optum or Accredo? Will they be going to one of the players that's maybe a little smaller?
That's a possibility, but in a perfect market, the market leaders should be the net winners. And so companies like my former employer, which have built a machine for specialty, and so have the other guys, they're very capable, very sophisticated, and they have the lowest cost dispensing models, period, stop. So in a perfect model, they should be competing for and winning incremental prescriptions, filling their factories, which is what they'd like to do. So I do think it's a tool that works inside even the largest players as a routing tool, making them more efficient at what they do. And then in the end, if you're competing in the national market, you have to have a network model. One size fits all, closed exclusive model, those days are done. And the market is demanding open source, it's demanding choice. And so we're just doing what the market is demanding right now. And that's exactly how we've configured our tool.
Well, maybe that will dovetail into an interesting discussion around just the PBM industry in general. And, you know, from your seat, you've seen the evolution over the past couple decades of the industry. You know, I'd love to get your perspective on, you know, A, the history and the evolution of it. And, you know, where do you think the PBM industry stands today, and where is it going, and maybe some of the challenges and opportunities for those players?
Yeah, well, I love that question because, candidly, I love this industry. I've been doing this from kind of the get-go, and as have most of my teammates that we have at Waltz. But this industry started just as a plain vanilla claims processing industry, and clearing pharmacy claims was the basic thing. In fact, the company that we started, SXC, was the actual original architect of Rx Claim and the original infrastructure that about half the industry runs on. The PBMs then graduated and became pharmacies. They built out scaled mail order pharmacy footprints. And this was sort of an early chapter in the industry. It was very important. And they became a pharmacy, which think of as competing with retail pharmacies. Then they overlaid a financial model really fueled by rebates, very central to the model, big time economics. And then later in the early 2000s, specialty emerged and Caremark was one of the original entrants. I was part of that business early on. So now you have two mail order components, a specialty component and a traditional mail order. And the business was really performing and saving consumers and payers a lot of money. What happened then was a massive consolidation, really, in the middle market. Mm-hmm. And we played a part in that during the Catamaran run prior to United Healthcare buying us. But, you know, I would say maybe in the last 5 years, you've seen the full formation now of an oligopoly form. And the big three players, you know, command well in excess of 80 plus, perhaps 90% of the market. And kind of the last chapter that you've seen evolve is this vertical integration of health plans with large scale PBMs coming together and creating monoliths of vertically integrated providers. And so very interesting set of changes in this industry. And it has been a value creating industry from the start. And I'm actually very bullish that it will morph and continue to be an important part of our, you know, healthcare landscape.
That was a great synopsis. You know, one thing that came to mind, you know, when you joined Caremark in the mid-2000s, was part of the strategy, was the strategy obvious back then to capture the specialty channel? Was it obvious to the different players that you had to have that beachhead in specialty and that was going to be one of the most important drivers for the next decade or two?
Well, you know, look, I won't speak for what is now CBS Caremark, but back in the day, Caremark Therapeutic Services, which I helped run, was mm-hmm. sort of the original, and it was human growth hormone at the time and a handful of therapies, heavy in hemophilia, and they were the number one player. In many respects, invented the specialty space. So, yes, I would say I credit that business for having the forethought and maybe the foresight to see it coming. But this is back when it was just a minuscule amount of the drug spend. It's now half. And so what you've seen is these companies bet big on this space through acquisition, building out these capabilities. You know, it might be half of the profitability in the big three PBMs, all encompassed in specialty. So critically important to the lifeblood of those businesses and, you know, of the payers as well. It's the biggest area of spend that they contend with.
And if you think about the industry today versus, you know, maybe 10 years ago or 5 years ago, you know, we've had this creation of these GPOs, whether it's Sync or Ascent or MSR, you know, has that made the industry even less transparent than it was a couple years ago?
Well, I do think that on the cost of goods side, and here I'm talking about how you procure the product from the innovators and how it moves through the channel, including through the wholesalers into the dispensing pharmacy locations. I think the GPOs are a furthering of the cost of goods leverage that the biggest buyers on the planet, read the three big PBMs, exert. And so it's just another way to add a group purchasing aspect, a bundling aspect to buy more volume, make bigger buyers bigger, and then capture more margin on the buy side of contracting. So has it made the business less transparent? I think maybe so, which is why you hear all the saber rattling from a lot of major players, including, you know, the feds, FTC, the Department of Justice. It's a long list. So I'd have to say yes. I think it has served to make the industry less transparent.
It's funny. My next question was going to be around the saber rattling in Washington. So you had some good foresight there. How do you feel the regulatory landscape is going to shape up? I mean, it seems like every couple of years we get a lot of news stories about middlemen and PBMs, but we don't actually see a lot of action out of Washington that fundamentally changes anything at the end of the day. I'd love to get your take on where we are and where you think the regulatory side or policy side is going.
Well, look, I appreciate that question because I spent, you know, the last decade on the PCMA board and I chaired it 1 year. I pay attention to these matters because they really do impact the business. I would say in, you know, 25 plus years in this industry, I have never seen the level of saber rattling. And when I say that specifically, we have the federal government taking Senate and congressional panels and grilling PBM executives. We have the Federal Trade Commission and the Department of Justice investigating the practices of the largest players. You've got the state attorney generals defending the stores in their service areas. And then you've got CMS interacting on price. And here it's directly impacting pharma. So the IRA is a great example, setting price ceilings, starting with, you know, 10 drugs and Medicare going to 25 and beyond. So our thing here at Waltz is we do not think that government mandated price controls is the best solution. We think the industry can police itself and will police itself. And what we're building is machinery. We call it free market machinery to drive down prices instead of government mandated price controls, which I like to say is a failed enterprise. It's not going to work. The industry can do this on its own.
That brings up a good point. You know, if I think about a marketplace, you know, there's a friction there, I think, with the incumbents. You know, do you see that? Do you see that as a true statement? Is there friction with the incumbent players in the supply chain with what Waltz is trying to do?
Yeah, look, we're obviously talking to the largest players and we've known them for years. These men and women are extremely smart and they have a crystal ball in this industry because that's what they're paid to do, to think about it. So there's nothing that we're talking about they haven't contemplated. Is there friction? There's friction all around their world. And healthcare is just replete with friction and co-opetition everywhere. And so will we be driving more competition? Yes. Will we be trying to save consumers money? Yes. Those guys are market leaders. I'm expecting them to persevere and come out the other side of this in pretty good shape. So yes, there's some friction. I would say it's healthy. And we certainly don't underestimate any of those guys.
Mm-hmm. And if you think about some of the efforts to maybe unbundle that traditional model, and the one that comes to mind to me is Blue Shield of California and their announcement about what they're trying to do. You know, do you think that model is going to be successful? And do you think we'll see more of that from different payers and plan sponsors?
From a distance, I'll just say it was clearly a big splash. And when a large plan, 4 or 5 million lives like a Blue Shield of California, makes a change like this, it does create a sentinel effect. I think that there are many plans contemplating this. The whole notion of unbundling the traditional PBM benefit, I just talked about our tool being an open source model. So there's a lot of similarities. And they're talking about publicly of driving $500 million in drug spend savings. Now, when you put together a constellation of providers, and I think it includes Amazon and Abarca and Mark Cuban and lots of players, I will just say, having grown up in this industry, that will be a heavy lift. This is not a trivial endeavor to rebuild what was a traditionally managed PBM benefit, which is complex. And so, look, the whole industry's watching. I'm pulling for them. And I think, you know, proof's in the pudding as they come live with, you know, implementing a pretty complicated reset of unbundling this thing and lashing it together with five players. You know, obviously, we've spoken with them and we're trying to figure out how Waltz can help. So, you know, I'm pulling for Blue Shield of California.
No, I agree. I think there's a complexity there that might be a challenge. But, you know, like you said, the proof will be in the pudding and you know, whether they can drive that $500 million of savings. Maybe shifting back to Waltz a little bit, you know, in the day-to-day managing the business, what are you looking at in terms of KPIs? What are the most important kind of metrics for, you know, your management team? You know, what gives you confidence that you're on the right track from a metrics perspective? I don't know if it's just pure revenues or transactions. What are some of the key things you're looking for in the growth of this kind of nascent business?
Well, I love that question, Jonathan, because what sets us apart is we're sort of not a startup. I mean, I've got guys with 20 and 30 years of operating experience. They're all operators. Jeff Park, our president, is an operator. Joel Saban's an operator. Mark Halloran's an operator. We've built businesses. So we're running this as a small company like a public company. And so in terms of KPIs and systems, look, our secret sauce is our technology. And this integrated comparison engine, we call it ICE. It's really the tool that drives marketplace. It ingests a lot of data and it comes back with good answers at the member level. And so that tool, if you think of it as version two of what I talked about earlier, RX claim, claims processing tool, we've now put this integrated comparison engine on top of it. So it's an advanced next generation tool set that includes routing. So I keep score on where are we on development. I keep score on how much value can it drive to the paying marketplace. And so we do pay attention to our economics. And, you know, look, our tool set that I described to you in our first two products are processing 55 million transactions this year. It is scaled. And, you know, from a revenue standpoint, I'm looking at a 2025 outlook that will be north of $50 million. It's SaaS revenue. So, you know, this is a high margin software business, and our future is pretty bright.
That's great. You know, if we go back to the formation of the company, you have a blue chip board of venture investors. You know, clearly the management team all has a rich history in on the operational side. What do you think was the most compelling pitch when you made it to your VC partners in terms of, you know, the idea? You know, clearly you had the operational side in spades, but the idea, I think, the genesis of the idea and what really made them gravitate to investing in Waltz?
Well, that was a fascinating drill and the first time I've ever, you know, I've run public companies, but never raised money from venture and never on a product that was still in the ether. So we had a set of charts and a handful of experts. And we raised $35 million. We had term sheets from a wide range of the biggest VCs. And we talked with Oak, General Catalyst, A16Z, Bessemer, Flare. It was a very long list. And we selected Google Ventures as our anchor because they opened up their business to the marketplace builders inside Google. And we've been utilizing that from a technology standpoint from the get-go. And then we also looked to the blues. And so BVF and Echo came into the capital stack, and every blues plan in the country is a small owner of Waltz. It's very important with where we're starting on our mission. We think the blues are at some level disadvantaged and we can help them perhaps the most, but we'll be helping all of the health plans. And so, you know, what was it that they were interested in? We showed them our product. You know, we opened up under confidentiality, our product roadmap. And it is identical to what we started 2.5-3 years ago. So they liked the plan. They want disruption in this industry. You know, someone's going to do it. And we think it's going to be us because you really need three things to be successful if you want to transform or rewire a segment of the industry. You need to know what to do. And we think we've got a strategy that can get it done. Then you need to know who to call. You need a set of relationships that are tried and true. Not just that they'll take your call, but they'll listen to your arguments and then employ what you've recommended. And then the third thing you have to have, or you're still just working with, you know, a set of charts, is you have to have volume. And we're going to be bringing some of the largest health plans in the market to this tool with their lives. We've already got 8 million lives on our second product. And so it's volume. And if you can do all three things, you can actually rewire the power grid, which is what we're setting out to do.
Was there any one pushback that you got from your investors, or maybe put another way, was there one question that maybe challenged you in terms of how are you going to execute on this vision that maybe came across, that seemed like a theme across those various investors?
Not on the merits of the business model. I did get challenged on, you know, why are you doing this? And how long are you going to do this? And I did hear that quite a bit. And I would just say to that, my answer is really, look, I'm not too worried about the long term and how long it takes. Someone asked me, how long are you going to do it? I'm going to say as long as it takes. Because in many respects, I've been training for this job my whole life. And I brought my son along and 30 people I love, not to just leave them. I'm in the fight for the whole thing. And so we're going to be successful. We'll scale this business as a highly profitable software provider. And I would say that was perhaps the biggest objection, but I think the market can recognize that I'm out there, you know, with a machete, blazing a trail, and I'm bringing my whole team. And there's nothing I love more than using a career of relationships and market knowledge to get something important done. So that was perhaps our biggest objection I heard. And I think our current investors can see that's not a concern.
No, I could see that. You know, if you think about the differences between running a public company and I know you're not considering yourself a startup anymore, but a smaller company that in the private space, you know, what have been some of the more enjoyable aspects of that endeavor vis-a-vis the prior experience you had on the public side?
Well, I was telling my wife just the other day, I have never had more fun. I think we're at 35 people now, and we are moving so fast. And we've got such a good flow of information. Just had a recent staff meeting with so many irons in the fire. This is fun because we are blowing and going. It reminds me of the early days at SXC, where we architected a 60-fold increase in shareholder wealth. And so we're back in the early days. This is the company building side. And in large companies, there's an awful lot of administration. And you know, you've got to pay attention to a wide range of things. And in a public company setting, you've got 30% of your time talking to the street and your investors, and none of that is really advancing, you know, your value prop with your customers. So, look, I'm a customer person. My team is focused on delivering for customers. It's a lot more fun, to be honest with you, running a business that is smaller, nimble, fast, and you're just not burdened with some of those other complexities.
No, I can certainly see that. And if we think about your roadmap over the next couple of years, you know, you talked about the introduction you're going to do this summer. But, you know, what if you think about the keys and maybe challenges to executing on some of those initiatives, does one come to mind? Or, you know, where's the biggest risk to the story as you see it today?
Yeah, I think it's the things that I spend all my time on. Our customers and talent. And then I'd leave my domain experts on the product side. My son is leading it on the technology side. Halloran has got it. But you have to have the right talent. So I spend a decent amount of my time. We have become a bit of a magnet for talent. People are really learning what we're doing, and we're getting some amazing market leading people coming to us asking to sign on. And so we just have to have the right mix of talent as we mature the product line, move farther up this continuum that I've outlined. And I'd say getting that talent on board, onboarding them and getting the highest and best use of their skills is perhaps our biggest challenge. I wouldn't call it a risk. It's actually a lot of fun, but that I would call it our biggest challenge, Jonathan.
Got it. Well, maybe we'll wrap up in a couple minutes here, but you know, one of the things I like to do at the end of these discussions is ask the guest, you know, what's a personal lesson that drives you in your day to day and maybe informs how you think about, you know, the company that you're working for and your mission? Is there anything that drives you on your day to day?
Well, yeah, there is. And look, I was born on a farm in Iowa. And so I had work ethic ingrained into me from the very start by my parents. And so along the way in business, the one thing I've learned, it's actually kind of a two-part learning, but the biggest lessons come around two variables. The first is preparation is the key to success. And I apply this every day on my own work and my entire team's work. And so one thing is for sure, we are prepared going into any battle. And the second thing is relationships matter. And here I learned this from my mom. But I've spent my career in this space, and that is building C-suite relationships across this industry, and we're using them as we speak. And so relationships in this business totally matter. And I'd say those are the two things, the two lessons, Jonathan, that I think about a lot.
That's great. So be prepared and maintain those relationships. That's the key.
Well, that's worked for me.
Well, Mark, why don't we wrap up here? That's Mark Thierer, the CEO of Waltz Health. I'd also like to thank our listeners for joining us on our latest episode. Please make sure to click the follow button on your podcast app so you never miss a future discussion with the leaders in healthcare innovation. I'm Jonathan Palmer, and you've been listening to the Vanguards of Healthcare podcast by Bloomberg Intelligence. Until next time, take care.
Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business, from liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
Johann Schmiegel, you've got the world's highest IQ.
Yes, 247.
Wow, did you know that thanks to Salesforce with Einstein AI, everyone's smarter? Now everyone's an Einstein, just like you.
But I'm the smartest.
Not anymore. With connected data and trusted AI, everyone can give customers experiences they've only dreamed of. Oh, look, here's a few Einsteins now.
Hey, hi.
Hola, amigo.
Everyone's an Einstein?
It's okay, Johann, let it happen. The number one AI CRM. Now everyone's an Einstein with Salesforce.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.